Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, for real this time, I'm back on the East Coast, Ben Golver. What's up, man?
Not too much, Andrew. I was perusing your rundown today. I see you have a nice light episode, so I'm here to ruin it because you picked all these fun questions, these hypotheticals, you know, your favorite KD conspiracy theories about the future and all these other light topics.
Yes.
I want to start on a slightly more serious note, if that's okay. And obviously, I'm referring to John Wertheim's investigation into the Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah.
If our listeners have not read that, I encourage all of them to go read it. Male listeners, I encourage you to forward it to the females that you care about in your life. Ask them for their thoughts on it and listen for a solid 30 minutes. My guess is you're going to come away with some experiences that maybe you hadn't heard about before in terms of their working life. That was certainly the case for me. I did that this week and it was eye-opening. You know, you think you know sometimes about what goes on a day-to-day basis in people you care about's life, but you don't always know. So right. I think not only was this a great story in terms of revealing, you know, patterns of, you know, kind of questionable behavior by one key executive and some criminal behavior by a writer for the Mavericks team website, it's just also an opportunity for some heart-to-heart conversations.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's part of the value is going to be starting conversation around this in sports, because I don't think that some of the misbehavior is limited to the Mavericks. And I think getting out in front of it, particularly on the NBA side, since that's what we cover, like, I think that it's a good opportunity for other teams to sort of look inward and see where they can improve, what problems they have, and be proactive about this. I hope that that is going to be the impact of the Wertheim Mavs investigation. I mean, who knows? Because honestly, some of that should have happened already. But I think that that's sort of where we're moving.
I think you're right. I think it also needs to be a look inward movement for Mark Cuban himself. And I think his response so far to me, it's really been mixed results. You know, he tried to get out in front of it. He tried to take accountability. I didn't think his explanations on each point were very great. I mean, he said he kept an employee after a domestic violence arrest because he wanted to make sure that the guy didn't go somewhere else and do the same thing. You know, come on. That's not good enough. Not even close. And, you know, he tried to say, oh, these are former employees. I fired. I cleaned house. You know, he sort of said the things that you would expect. And I think this is really a moment of reckoning for him about his own behavior, about his entire ownership tenure in Dallas. It's not just about trying to sweep this under the rug and move along. It sounds like he's serious in terms of this investigation that he's launching,
yeah,
basically into his organization. And we do want to sort of reserve judgment until we hear the results from that. But I think what Cuban needs to realize here is it's always been tempting for him to portray himself as this maverick, this guy who thumbs his nose at authority. You know, he's going to change the old-fashioned way the NBA does business. He's the owner. He could do what he wants. Like, that's how he's always kind of portrayed himself.
Sure.
But what I think this episode shows, that sets a real tone, and it explains how much power leaders actually have in terms of creating a culture underneath them. You know, maybe it's not the world's biggest deal if he runs out onto the court once and stares down David Stern over some foul calls. But when you have that pattern of behavior where he's constantly running afoul of league rules, if you've got
I don't know.
Employees,
I don't know if I buy this, man.
Okay, well, stick with me and we'll hear it out, because I think if you have a pattern of behavior where you're thumbing your nose at rules, regulations, the way things are being done, and you have bad actors in your organization, what message are they taking away from that? Are they feeling the comfort needed to carry on behavior like his former president did for years and years and years? And so to me, when we start to have this talk about corrosive locker room environment, or it's like Animal House or whatever,
right,
that definitely starts with Cuban. And when you look down his track record of what he's done, I mean, he trampled the NBA's tampering rules. He's gone after the refs time and time again, public disputes with David Stern, fast and loose. It all contributes to that environment. And you could definitely see why female employees working that organization would feel intimidated, as they said in the story. You would feel like they didn't have anyone to go to, as they felt in the story. And you would also see how male employees would feel protected, would feel like, hey, if the boss is doing all the crazy stuff the boss is doing, you know, who's, you know, really going to come after me if I get in trouble, and are these guys going to have my back? It just creates a very questionable dichotomy that he has to answer to. And I'm not saying like overnight because of this story,
right,
Mark Cuban's now all of a sudden a terrible person, but I think he needs to realize that he's two people at the same time. You know, he's the person he wants to be, that guy who gives no Fs, you know, the fun-loving owner who does it his way. But he's also the guy who sets the ground rules for his organization, who basically determines in a large manner the behavior of his employees underneath him. And he's also the guy who looked the other way, as he's admitted, over the course of multiple years as these things were happening. He needs to realize he's both of those people, the guy he Sure. wants to be seen as and the guy he's now being portrayed as. And he needs to react to that. And I think that's why, you know, we need to give Adam Silver some credit here on this fine that he doled out, because $600,000 for a comment on Dr. J's podcast about tanking is not typically what we would see from the NBA in that situation. I mean, that was a huge message, I thought, from the commissioner to Cuban, basically saying, look, playing around in the gray areas, you know, trying to skirt the rules, trying to be edgy, like, the time for that is done. We're taking a harder line with you. And I don't think the timing at all here was coincidence in terms of, you know, when Cuban draws the biggest fine of his career from the league office,
really?
You know, the very day after this story dropped.
Yeah.
No, I don't. Because the NBA has had a Cuban issue for a decade. You know, I mean, he's always pushing and prodding and trying to change things. And, you know, for most of the time since Stern left, I think Silver's been a little bit looser in general, you know, towards Mark Cuban.
It's
been friendlier. There's been more two-way dialogue. Silver came out and absolutely smacked him. I mean, $600,000 is a ton of money for losing is in our best interest.
I understand what you're saying. I do think that you're sort of conflating a lot of different dynamics here, some of which are related and some of which the connections are a little bit more tenuous, just because I think Cuban screwed up, and Cuban has admitted to screwing up with the way he handled this, and he's been pretty clear. I think his exact words were, I effed up, and he said that a number of times. His mistake is trying to explain his rationale at the time and think that anyone would be okay with his thought process then, because it was a mistake then. Like, I mean, the dude... The writer, Earl Sneed, who I've met before, like, he got arrested at the team facility, and the Mavs thought it was okay to bring him back. And that alone sends a message to the rest of the organization, far more than anything Cuban has done, it, like, related to the league or what.
But it fits in. It's like, of course Cuban's going to bring it back,
well,
right?
Because I guess,
you know,
so.
It fits,
I mean,
into his personality. I mean,
I think Cuban's bigger mistake was hiring the guy, Buddy Pittman, the HR person, and I don't even know if he hired him. I mean, and the team president, who's also figures prominently in the story, was in Dallas before Cuban bought the team, so I don't totally pin that on him either. And I think
I do. If Under Armour fires him after 2 months, or he basically leaves Under Armour after 2 months because of his behavior, that's clearly an organization to me that has a healthy culture with checks and balances in terms of human resources type behavior. If he's just chilling in Dallas and he's there for 15 years and he's making a lot of money for Cuban, and he's in a huge prominent role in that organization, I just don't buy this idea that Cuban's going to try to say, hey, look, I'm on the basketball side, I'm not on the business side. Because my point is this: Cuban's influence extends throughout the organization because he's the boss. Everyone turns to that boss as the icon for how you can behave and what's okay and what's not okay. And clearly, what's okay in Dallas is far different than what's okay in other places around the league.
I think that that's fair. I also think that he deserves to get hammered for this. I just think that you're drawing a connection between public Cuban and a case where I think he is most guilty of turning a blind eye and not wanting to look at some of the, like, more disgusting elements of some of his employees' behavior, which unfortunately is a human thing. And I think that the most important byproduct of some of these investigations is going to be to make it clear to people like Mark Cuban, because it's this, again, I refuse to believe that this is limited to just the Mavericks, but the value of these investigations is making it clear that, like, it's not acceptable to just take your employees' word for it and ignore the police reports about a domestic violence incident, or and like, it's not acceptable to hire an HR guy who may not be listening to female employees' complaints. Like, I think there were structural issues and there were personal failings on the part of, like, the people in charge, and but I don't necessarily, like, some of it, I understand where Cuban is coming from, if that makes sense.
No, it doesn't really. I mean, he got caught. Like, this is his worst case scenario. He made some bad hires. There's no question about it. But he also oversaw a culture that produced a title, had an unbelievable basketball operations. As John Wertheim wrote, you know, the players were never involved in any of the kind of harassment. So there were certain aspects to this this organization that were top shelf, that are absolutely models around the league. But, you know, Cuban has some weak parts to his personality. There's no question about it.
And, totally.
You know, whether it's ego, whether it's, you know, hubris or whatever, like thinking that you're above the law, thinking you can do anything, being so rich that you can buy yourself out of any situation, and those kinds of things. I think that mentality, those personal weaknesses or flaws, contributed to all of this. I think otherwise he would have had different responses along the way as these things were being brought up. And I believe the executive was first kind of called to the carpet by local media back in the 90s for some of this stuff, and he just stayed on forever. And to me, again, that's on Cuban. There's no escaping that.
It's totally on Cuban. I'm just saying I'm not outraged as much as, like, I think that this is a bigger problem that exists in a lot of different places and that we should be working to correct. And, like, I think the Mavs will get hammered. I don't necessarily think that the tanking comment fine is going to be, like, that will probably pale in comparison to what the NBA actually does to Cuban as this process plays out.
I agree. But don't you think that was sort of the warning shot? It was like Silver's way of saying, hey, look, man.
That makes sense.
Like, get back in line. That's how I read it.
What do you think about the comparisons to Donald Sterling?
I mean, look, I think if Cuban had been his team president, you know, doing all of those things and on the record harassing all the employees, then I think the comparison makes more sense.
Yeah.
I'm not necessarily advocating at this point to take away the franchise, but I would like to see what this investigation unfolds, because you know, if it goes deeper and darker than what the two SI writers were able to you know, uncover, then I think all options should be on the table. I'm not saying, you know, rip away the franchise from him. I'm not saying he's a horrible person, you know, through and through. But you know, and I think the difference with Sterling was that was the case. Like, as soon as it came out, it was like, okay, we have to banish this guy immediately, as quickly as possible, whatever it takes to get him out. So that's the contrast. But if I'm Silver, I want to see that investigation. And frankly, I wish the NBA had done its own investigation. I wish they weren't letting the Mavericks run this.
I'm surprised that they aren't. And before we move on, I just want to be clear that I'm not defending Mark Cuban. I just think that it's a broader cultural problem that we're all sort of reckoning with right now. And I think there are a lot of people who aren't necessarily bad people who kind of avert their eyes to bad behavior that then sort of become part of the problem, sometimes unwittingly. And I think that is ultimately what investigations like these are going to end up changing, hopefully. So
yeah, and I just think also there are sometimes people in power who have different types of bad behavior that can create to a culture that allows all sorts of you know, misbehavior to go unchecked, because it just sets a tone. But look, I want to bring this to a lighter topic because it's your birthday today, Andrew.
It is.
I wanted
my birthday,
to say happy
yes.
birthday. And you know what I found very funny? You know, I'm always kidding you about, you know, 30 plus sharp, and, you know, how you always want to look back into the 90s for the good old days and reminisce.
Yeah,
I've made those kinds of cracks before. You always blanch when I say that. You don't like hearing that. But I woke up this morning to an email from you on your 31st birthday and you wanted to lead the podcast with the topic top 10 players under 23. So to me, this is just another perfect example where you want to go relive the college glory days, you know, when you didn't have the burdens of a family and mortgage payments and, you know, all the other things that comes with being 30, just the fun-loving times back before you were getting locked into hotel rooms with me doing podcasts about Kawhi Leonard's future and right. not enjoying the LA nightlife. You wanted to just loosen it up and throw it back a little bit, didn't you?
No, you know what it is that as I get older, I'm trying to stay connected to the youth. I'm trying to look forward. I'm trying to age like Greg Popovich and not Phil Jackson. So I figured it would be fun. we got a question here from Stuart who says, could you guys try ranking the top 10 players under 23 in the NBA? Who among them would you predict will become superstars? Not necessarily among the best ever, but capable of leading their teams deep into the playoffs at some point. And yeah, I just think that this is a kind of a fun conversation. We're in sort of a dead week here. This is going to run on a Friday, so we after the Thursday night games come back. But I listed the names there for you. Should we read out the candidates that I listed?
Okay, that was my first question. Did you create this list because you've got some glaring errors here? I mean, are we doing 23? Are we doing 23 and under? I think that's what we're doing because you have Embiid on the list. But the problem is you forgot our guy Giannis on your list.
Oh my God! I honest to God, I cannot believe that Giannis is not older than 23 at this point. That's a mistake.
Yeah, it was, you know, I'm glad to bring it up because I love pointing out your mistakes. But yes, list off the guys that you've got there.
Okay, so here are the candidates. We're going to include Giannis, obviously. And then we have Karl-Anthony Towns, Devin Booker, Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, Kristaps Porzingis, Dario Saric, probably not going to make the top 10, Dario, but had to yeah, include
probably
him
not.
Just because he's had a nice little year here. Clint Capella, Nikola Jokic, Jamal Murray, Brandon Ingram, Jaylen Brown, 10-time All-Star Jason Tatum, Lowry Markkanen.
No, 12-time. 12-time. 12-time.
12-time. We've updated 12-time that. All-Star Jason Tatum. We'll edit that in. Lonzo Ball, De'Aaron Fox, and Donovan Mitchell. So it's actually a pretty competitive field if we're limiting this to 10. Who's number one?
What else I thought was funny here, you didn't even include Wiggins. You're just out. So far out on Wiggins, he didn't even make your list.
Let's be honest. Wiggins is like would be lucky to crack the top 20 if we're being real about it.
Wow. So you got Clint Capella. Look, I love Clint Capella, but he's in that spoon-fed Marcin Gortat category.
Okay, 100%. Hold on. But again, let's be honest. Who would you rather have on your team right now, Andrew Wiggins or Clint Capella?
Oh, it's not close. I would take Capella. But I was trying to answer the emailer's question when I made my list, and he said, basically, who are going to be capable of leading their teams deep into the playoffs, right? That was sort of my guiding framework.
Okay.
And I think you can make a pretty reasonable case that
Capella.
A guy like Capella is probably not going to be leading his team into the playoffs. But look, we're not hating on Clint Capella. He's one of the most underrated players in the NBA. So like full props to Capella. I'm actually glad you had him on that list because most people probably wouldn't have.
Uh-huh.
Let's start at the top. For me, number one is Giannis with a bullet. No problem. I'm taking him all the way.
And it's actually pretty interesting because this conversation, like the top spot would not have been that clear had we had this conversation a year ago. I think both you and I would have chosen Giannis, but it would have been a little bit controversial. And now there is a clear gap between him and everyone else on this list for a variety of reasons. But like, I don't think it's even a debate that you would take Giannis over someone like Karl Towns. So I'm with you there. And then it gets kind of tricky at number two.
Oh, it does. Who'd you have?
I think I have Towns, and I don't feel great about it, in part because really, and I said like there's a gap between Giannis and everybody else for a variety of reasons. And what I meant there is that if I could trust Joel Embiid to stay healthy, he would be like 1A next to Giannis, but I still don't really buy into like the next 5 years of Embiid's health, in which case I think Kat has got to go number two because he's offensively, I mean, even now, like even after the first couple months where everybody was kind of wringing their hands over his defense and whatnot, like he's still just obscenely talented on offense. And it seems very difficult to imagine like a scenario where he's not an all NBA level player for the better part of the next 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, good thoughts. I'm going to play the semantic games a little bit again, based on who can lead their team deep into the playoffs at some point in the future. To me, Embiid's got to be number two. I mean, I don't think it's out of the question that he takes the Sixers to the Eastern Conference Finals this year. Like, that's a scenario that could happen. Now, I'm not saying it will happen, but, you know, like, is Towns going to be doing that right now? Like, what is his ceiling at this moment? I mean, what's the likelihood that Embiid takes the Sixers onto a deep playoff push here in the next 3 years? I think it's very, very high, as long as he stays healthy, of course. And so I'm kind of waiving the health thing for the purposes of this exercise, and I have Embiid as a clear two. I had Towns at three, and I think this year's playoffs will be very illuminating. You know, hopefully we get the Sixers in there as well, because that will test with the theory that I'm having. But it will also be illuminating for Towns too. It's like, how much problems does he cause for people? How ready is he for that moment? You know, who do they match up with, and is he able to exploit those things, or, you know, does he get picked on? I mean, you know, these are all questions that you just don't know for big guys at that young of an age. And like, we didn't see Towns out there hanging with LeBron and Steph and KD in the final moments of the All-Star game. Like, I still think he's got a level to prove that he hasn't done yet. So I add him three.
Yeah. You know what else is going to be interesting with Towns is, like, I think there's a combination of Tibbs not really coaching offense very well and Jimmy Butler just having a domineering personality who tends to take over like the final 6 minutes of every Wolves game. But there have been a couple Wolves games I've watched this year where like Towns just doesn't touch the ball for like long stretches of the fourth quarter. And I think that's more a Wolves failing than a Towns failing, but it's going to be interesting to see how well they can integrate him in, because I, like, again, he's just like crazy talented, and they need to figure out a way to kind of optimize that to have any chance at like really beating good teams in the playoffs.
I think my next pick might be a little controversial for you. I don't know.
Well, wait, before we go ahead, okay. My question for you is, are we ranking them like this season or looking ahead?
No, I'm looking ahead, because a lot of these guys are not going to be leading their teams deep into the playoffs this year. But that what I'm saying is, for Embiid, that's a legit possibility right now. And that's the same thing with Giannis right now. I mean, we opened the season, I said Giannis should win a playoff series and win 50 games. That was my expectations for him, right? I'm not saying he should be doing that 3 years from now. And so,
yeah.
Well, him being ahead on that curve helps keep him at the number one spot on my list. And the same thing for like Embiid versus Towns versus a guy like Porzingis or Jokic. Like, among those centers, I think Embiid is the most ready to do it from that group. And I think he's got the best chance to do it from that group over the next 2, 3, 4 years.
Yeah. I mean, Embiid, if he's healthy, Embiid is basically as impactful defensively as Rudy Gobert and as talented offensively as Karl Towns. So like, he should be number one on the list if he's gonna be healthy over the next 5 to 10 years. I just don't totally buy that. But before we move on, Ben, we have a new sponsor. I'm very excited here. Buffalo Wild Wings. It's that time again. The familiar crossroads of choosing between NBA basketball and college basketball. You can't choose. They're both on. Ben, do we have any solution here?
Yeah, Andrew, relax. We've got a solution. It's Buffalo Wild Wings. They've got multiple TVs. You can watch whatever you want. Don't worry about buying 6 different screens for your living room. Just come on into the B-dubs, man. They've got college basketball, the tournament. They've got NBA basketball, the playoff push. Every game is playing on dozens of television screens. They will have a screen for your need. And really, to complete the experience, the best thing is they've got the food too. Now, you're probably thinking, Ben, come on, you're a vegetarian. What does Buffalo Wild Wings have to offer you? Well, first of all, they've got amazing dip. So you can just drink the ranch, drink the hot sauce, whatever you want to do on that end. But in addition to all of the wings and their 21 sauces, They've got cheese curds, Andrew, and you know I love cheese curds from my North Dakota experience. They've got other great appetizers like fried pickles. They've got it all, okay? They have a full menu. Vegetarians, vegans are completely welcome at Buffalo Wild Wings. And, you know, non-vegetarians too. Go chow down on a few dozen wings while you're watching a game, man.
Yeah, absolutely. They also have a variety of beers to quench your thirst, and then all the basketball you can possibly want, all the food, all the beer. Get into it. Find your local Wild Wings. Check it out. Please drink responsibly. And I enjoyed that you had to read the chicken wings part. But really, though, if I'm being honest, when I go to Buffalo Wild Wings, I'm in it for the apps.
Wait, is that a cool way to say appetizers?
Yes.
Wow. Unbelievable.
But, yeah, absolutely. You learn something new every podcast.
Cutting edge linguist over here.
Check out Buffalo Wild Wings. Check out NBA and college basketball all at once. Let's get back into it, Ben.
Hey, Andrew, just come on into B-dubs, man.
All right. Give me your next person on the list.
Yeah, I'd still have Giannis at number one over Embiid just from the ball handling perspective, you know? You're the main guy. We've seen how important that is. So the premium there is why I would keep Giannis at one. But your point is well taken. You could make an argument for Embiid over Giannis easily. And I'm sure a lot of people in the rights to Ricky Sanchez, you know, camp would do that.
Sure.
All right. Number four, controversial pick maybe for you because you're a hater, Ben Simmons.
Yeah, I thought about it. It is controversial because, again, like picking Cat over Embiid, I didn't like having Ben Simmons in this spot, but Ben Simmons was third on my list. I think that he's so close to being completely unguardable and good on defense that like he's got to be as high as almost anybody on the list. Because really, he just needs a foul line jumper and he needs to improve the free throw shooting enough so that he's comfortable being aggressive and getting the line. And then, like, I don't know what the hell you do with him. So I'm with you. Make your case.
I am stunned. I am just stunned. I was not expecting this. I didn't even think you were going to have Simmons in your top 10. Okay. Well, you said a lot of what I was going to say. Again, it goes back to role for me. Ball in his hands. He can run an offense. Vision, playmaking for others. They're going to have a good offense, even if he didn't have Embiid as he grows older. I can just see him as being, you know, the type of point forward who takes his team to the second round basically every single year. And as I've said since the draft, I think he's easier to build lineups around than you would think based on his passing ability and then his, you know, defensive versatility as well. That's why he was four for me. I went back and forth with Simmons and Towns.
Yeah.
For right now, I think Towns probably still deserves the edge slightly. But, you know, if we did this again, you know, next year at this time, I wouldn't be surprised at all if Simmons had moved past Towns, largely because of this positional issue and role, basically.
Next on your list, who do you have?
Porzingis. And I thought about this one a little bit longer and harder than I would have, obviously, had he not been injured. I mean, that's a huge question mark, and it delays everything that New York was trying to do.
Yeah.
But when I look at the next group of guys, who's elite on both ends, he was kind of the last guy standing who I could really say has like elite potential offensively and defensively. And you know me, I like boring things like balance and complete players and two-way impact. And I still think the biggest shame of Porzingis getting injured here is because he was rapidly improving, but he still had a lot of improvement needed, right? Like passing, hitting the glass. I mean, there were so many ways for his game to fill out that hopefully he's just hitting pause on his career for a year and he can pick right up where he left off. But, you know, to me, he is still quite a bit further from his ceiling as a player than a lot of these other guys that we're talking about right now.
Yeah. See, I started to get into like hot take territory with the rest of my list because
let me guess what? Brandon Ingram.
Yes.
Lauri Markkanen.
Yup. Brandon Ingram is my fifth behind. So my top five are Giannis, Karl Towns, Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid. And And then I get fifth is Brandon Ingram and sixth is Lauri Markkanen. And I just don't have a lot of faith in Porzingis staying healthy the rest of his career. And I like, it's not fun to be that guy, but I think if we were acting like as an NBA team, who would I rather invest the next decade in? I think like Ingram has grown enough where I would be willing to take that chance. And I would certainly be willing to make that move with Lauri Markkanen.
Okay. You're going to need to do a little bit more explaining because I feel like lately, I don't know if it's a bit like you're the number one Lakers fan in the world, but you're really coming off like that lately. I mean, look, I'm glad that you didn't put Steph Curry on your list. I was a little worried that you were just going to put him number one because you can never say a bad thing about Steph, but you've really become this Lakers stan too. And I mean, you're going to have to give us a little more on Ingram for why he should even be in this conversation. I mean, what, year two, modest progress, still not an overwhelming offensive force, limited efficiency at this point. Yes, he's real thin. So, I mean, once he develops physically at some point, that should help.
Yeah.
Defensive ceiling. I'm not sure I see a gigantic defensive ceiling. I don't know. Break it down. Like, just, you're going to have to defend your insanity here.
Okay, so my case is basically that if you watch the last 6 weeks of the Lakers, you're starting to see the real Brandon Ingram. And we haven't really, I mean, he's still younger than most of the people that are in this draft upcoming. And so, like, I think people are just kind of, or he's not younger than most of this draft, but he's younger than most of the rookies currently. And
yeah, he just turned 20 in September.
Yes. And so he has a ton of room to grow. And offensively, like, he's already averaging over the last 6 weeks, close to 20 points a game. He's averaging 6 or 7 boards a game. He's passing better. He was running point for a couple weeks there for LA. Like, there's just a lot to like, and it's not totally clear what he's going to turn into and what type of superstar he'll be, but I think he's going to be at an all-star level for most of his career. And if you're looking at the young guys around the league, like, Ingram is as good a bet as almost anybody.
Well,
like, the ceiling is a little bit lower. The ceiling is a little bit lower, but the floor is going to be pretty high over the next few years.
Yeah, I would agree that he's probably underrated in terms of prospects around the league because the Lakers really haven't had that breakout, and because Lonzo just sucks up so much attention. And even like Randall, just like the trade stuff with Randall kind of distracts from Ingram.
Yeah.
I think you're right to point out that there has been, you know, some meaningful progress. I think one thing we should give him credit for, getting to the foul line a lot more in year two. That's big. I mean, that's going to need to be a staple of his game. I think the next step for him, and we've seen this for other guys as they kind of develop, is he's got to wean himself off of the long twos and turn those all into threes.
Yeah.
Like, if he wants to be an elite level wing, he really has to remake his shot selection diet. Otherwise, he's going to put up scoring numbers that, you know, get you a little excited, but he's not doing it efficiently enough to really, you know, be on the level where, you know, he thinks he should be, or where you think he should be. So I see some need for work there, but the fact that he's 20 kept him on my list too. I had him in the 10th spot. Hearing you talk, you know, I was almost willing to move him up a spot or two, but at this point, I think the jury's still out. And to be honest, I was expecting a little bit more of a breakout from him, and maybe it will come down the stretch as well, but I thought he was going to be a more forceful player for the Lakers than he's been this year.
Okay. Read me the rest of your list. We should run through this because we've got a lot of other stuff to get to.
Okay, number six is actually 12th time, Jason Tatum.
Really? Wow.
And for similar reasons as you just mentioned for Ingram, the age factor is like, you know, he came in, showed an efficient offensive game, multi-positional defensive player. I think he's got a number one alpha scorer potential down the road, and he's just so young. And I think his impact so far in year one was significantly better than like Ingram's impact in year one. And so I think that bodes well for just kind of his trajectory. You know, again, I'm a late arriver for Tatum. You know, he's not like my favorite player in the world, but I think we have to give him credit for what he's shown so far as a rookie. After him, I went Jokic. I had him a little bit lower than guys like Porzingis and Towns. I just think he's slightly trickier to build around.
Yeah, I agree.
And also minutes-wise, like, he's still not, you know, up on that level where he's like racking up like 36 minutes a night and, you know, he's just your go-to guy all the time. But I do think you can build a really good offense around him with, you know, players as bad as Emmanuel Mudiay, and he can still keep you in the top 10.
Right.
So, you know, from that standpoint, he's got to be here on the list, but he would be the last of those four centers that I would pick. Then I went Booker. I don't love Booker, but, you know, he has shown more than a lot of the other younger players in terms of, like, you know, demonstrated scoring ability. If you compare Booker to a guy like Wiggins, he's still younger, done some of the same things, and he's probably going to be in a position where he has to lead a team. Whereas Wiggins, you know, he's kind of already defaulted into a role where he's not going to be leading a team.
Yeah.
Then number nine, I went Donovan Mitchell. Because we saw sort of, you know, test drive, you know, when Gobert was out. I mean, he was essentially leading a team trying to make a playoff push. They're not going to win a playoff series with him as a number one guy as a rookie. But I think you saw enough this season to envision a team building its offense around him and having a good enough defense. Like, that could be a formula for Utah here going forward, where they're making a second round appearance where, you know, he's kind of the alpha and the omega scoring wise, and everybody else just plays defense around him.
Yeah, definitely.
And then 10 was Ingram.
10 was Ingram. Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's not a bad list. That's probably more reasonable than mine. I will say I forgot to rank Devin Booker as well. So here's my amended.
How?
I know.
You know what it is? Too close to your own heart. You couldn't even see it.
It is. Well, Booker's in an interesting spot because he kind of reminds me of Kyrie Irving. And we'll never know how Kyrie's career would have looked had LeBron not gone back to Cleveland. But, I mean, he wasn't really on a playoff trajectory at that point. And who knows whether Booker is going to get the help he needs to, like, get him those playoff reps to where, like, everybody starts to respect his game more. Because he does have that kind of talent where, like, in a playoff series and in the fourth quarter of big games, like, Booker has enough creativity to his game where he can get hot and be completely unstoppable, but he's not the type of guy who's going to just, like, raise the baseline of your team's season to, like, 45 win minimum. And and Kyrie Irving is sort of the same way. And so I don't know where it goes for Booker if he stays in Phoenix.
Well, here's my thing on Booker. Something tells me he's, like, savvy enough to just find a way out of Phoenix early.
Yeah.
Like, I just have that suspicion in the back of my head that, like, his trajectory of, like, being stuck there for 8 years and, like, living through the frustrations of the second contract and all of those things, like, something tells me, and maybe it's the fact that, like, 15 other Suns players have forced their way out, or maybe it's the fact that we know they're not going to be able to build a good team around him. They're going to strike out again this summer, so it's just going to get bleaker and bleaker. But for whatever reason, I've had that thought for, like, the last year, is that Booker is going to be one of these guys who doesn't wait around, who takes sort of control of his own destiny, you know, finds a way to force himself to a better situation, and then maybe that's where the winning starts coming from. If you're asking me, do I think Booker can lead Phoenix to, like, consistent
yeah,
deep
I don't
playoff
really
runs over the next 6 years, I don't see it at all. But I do kind of think he's going to find a backdoor.
I hope so. The only other thought I had is that we picked the worst possible time to take shots at the Denver Nuggets, which I think we both said that we were kind of unimpressed by their season, like, early last week, headed into the All-Star break. And it just so happened that they're in the middle of winning, like, 8 of 12 and 6 of 7 and are playing.
But you're supposed to do that, Andrew. I mean, that's the thing. These teams that are mediocre, you know, they have, like, two good weeks and they want everybody to throw a parade for them. Congratulations. That's called every single week for the Spurs for the last 18 years.
Yeah.
You know, like, we don't have to bend over backwards for the
Denver
Nuggets
fans. I'm with
you.
I'm not here to really apologize because I watched a lot of underwhelming Nuggets games. I will say that they're beginning to look really solid, and I had Nikola Jokic ninth on my list, in part because I'm not confident that you can build a good defense around him, and so there might just be a ceiling on how good his teams are ever going to be. But I also am open to the possibility that you and I are wrong about the Nuggets and I am wrong about Jokic. So we'll see where the season
goes.
And I
should say, too, Jamal Murray was on my honorable mention list
here. He's in the mix,
I think there's no question he's in the mix with guys like Donovan Mitchell or Booker or whoever else you want to put in that category of like a guy who could lead his own offense with the ball in his hands constantly as he gets into his prime. He's still quite young and he's got the tools, you know, very intriguing prospect. You know, what's amazing though, is we both made it, I think 15, 20 minutes here. And we haven't even said the one key word, which is Lonzo. We didn't say it once. Not once.
Well, and I don't think that that's a shot at him necessarily. I just don't think that he is really the type of guy that I mean, we both like his game, but he's also never going to be the type of star that you can just like build a team around and expect him to take them like past the first round.
Yeah, don't you think that the way his rookie season's played out has dampened our enthusiasm, though?
Sure.
I mean, if we had done this same list in September, don't you think we have Lonzo like top five just because we're idiots?
No, I never really liked Lonzo. And honestly, one of the things that was hard last year is having to do the mock draft and pretend to be super impressed with Lonzo's game. A scout compared him to Kendall Marshall to me, like, early on in the process last year. And it informed the whole way I watched that UCLA season, and I was like, I just don't see it, in part because the shooting wasn't going to translate. But anyways, he's good though. Like, if the Lakers keep him, he can be a really solid fourth or fifth starter. I just don't see him as a star.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. But I do think his stock has really been swinging wildly here, and I'm glad he was charging people $200 per autograph over All-Star Weekend, because get that money while it's hot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
One question for you. I know we're doing under 23 stars. I mean, you didn't have LaMelo Ball anywhere on your list either?
I did it. I considered throwing in like some high school kid wild cards, but I decided we already had enough candidates. By the way, so I'll read my list in full. One is Giannis, two is Karl Towns, three is Ben Simmons, four is Embiid, five is Devin Booker, six Ingram, seven Lowry, eight Kristaps, nine Jokic, and 10 is Donovan Mitchell. So I had to bump 12-time Tatum, but...
You really hated on Tatum, and the Lowry thing, I think you need to explain a little more, too. Like, this is your current fetish. I don't really get it, but... Come on.
I just think that anyone who is that big, and he's more athletic than people expected, and probably more athletic than most people even realize now, because I had a stretch where I was watching a lot of Bulls games for fantasy basketball reasons, and he is good. Like, he's just really, really solid, and he eventually is going to shoot like 40% from three at 7 feet tall. Like, that there's just not much you can do with a guy like that. And I think that he's going to end up being really, really valuable for the Bulls. They're going to need a big man to protect the rim next to him. And like, Robin Lopez has actually been kind of a nice fit for them. So they just need a better version of Robin Lopez going forward. But there's going to be a lot of options in this year's draft as well.
Are you worried at all? I mean, can you involve him enough in your offense where he's making plays for others, where he's handling the ball, where he's doing things off the dribble, playing two-man game, drawing attention to create for his teammates? Because, like, his scoring numbers haven't been bad this year, but the Bulls' offense is an absolute train wreck, and you don't blame that on him. But, like, if he was this more dynamic, all-around type player, I don't think the team effect would be as bad as it's been. I guess I'm not saying he's one-dimensional in terms of what he's doing offensively, but is there enough there to really justify, like, hey, this is going to be a franchise offensive type player?
I think that remains to be seen, but I'm bullish on him in part because he's starting from a much higher floor than I would have expected coming into this season. And I think he's going to end up, I mean, I don't think he's going to be Dirk, but I think he's going to be much better than the Channing Frye player that people expected. And so it's a gut feeling. I'm not going to lie. With like, half of this is just instinct.
We can tell.
But I'm just saying, like, there's a lot there. And the way, I would say offensively, like, the way the Knicks were using Porzingis this year is one way the Bulls should look to use Lowry, and Lowry will be more effective in that role than Porzingis was for New York, because I think he's just a better shooter and more skilled.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I would say in Lowry's defense is like what I was harping on with Ingram in terms of shot selection diet. Lowry takes, if I'm doing my mental math here correctly, 6 times as many 3-point attempts as he does long twos. I mean, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Like for a rookie to have that, that's just absolutely gorgeous. But he's going to have to get to the free throw line more often. He's going to have to figure out how to do it off the dribble. You got to be more than just that, you know, kind of high volume spot shooter, floor spreader, you know, athlete type guy to have a franchise playoff type impact, I guess is my point with him.
Yeah. Well, walk with me, you know, let's see where this goes. This is going to be a journey. Hopefully we're still doing the podcast in 4 years and we can circle back to our top 23 or our under 23 rankings. We'll see how it ends. Cause it's tough also to gauge Chicago. Like some of the guys that he's out there with, I mean, like Jerry and Grant, is okay. But like Justin Holiday is arguably the worst starter in the NBA. And like, I cannot believe he's the best tanking weapon Chicago has. And then like Chris Dunn is really hit or miss depending on the game. And Zach LaVine is kind of all over the place as well. So it's tough, man. I give credit to Lowry for being able to be as effective as he's been as the Bulls kind of like figure it out on the fly this year.
Yeah, I feel you. Hey, Andrew, you know what time it is?
What time is it?
It's Mattress Firm time, of course. You know, before we move on, we've got to talk about our favorite company in the world, right? Mattress Firm.
Absolutely.
Everyone knows how important stretching is before an event. Athletes certainly know that. You got to stretch out. I certainly do stretches before every podcast. I don't know if you do, Andrew. Both physical and mental stretching. That's what Mattress Firm is all about. They're trying to stretch your dollar.
That's right. Your budget stretches further when you're shopping at America's Neighborhood Mattress Store. It's a true slam dunk. And they really bring the puns every week. They are the head coaches when it comes to mattress expertise. But know this, they're more than just mattress experts. They have a game plan that helps you transform your mattress into a bed. From adjustable bases and sheets to headboards and bedroom decor, they have you literally and figuratively covered up like your favorite 3-and-D wing.
Go to mattressfirm.com/podcast to see what deals are happening. Remember, these are slam dunking coaches with mattress expertise, and they offer a 120-night sleep trial to ensure perfection and a 120-night low price guarantee so that you know you paid the perfect price. You're not getting ripped off. So we're saying sleep trial, low price guarantee, talk about a 1-2 punch, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, if you will.
Lowry Markkanen and Zach LaVine, you know?
Yeah, Justin Holiday and Emmanuel Mudiay, if you will. Score big with the perfect bet, Andrew. Head to mattressfirm.com/podcast to get the play-by-play on how you can monumentally improve your sleep today, tonight, and tomorrow.
All right. Well, let's get back to it. I feel like almost every other NBA podcast will lead with the Kawhi Leonard news and accompanying speculation. But we sort of anticipated that story and covered it last week. I don't want to pat ourselves on the back too
careful. I know you stretch, but I don't want you to shoulder sprain. It really sounds like you're giving yourself a real hard pat on the back there.
No, but let's go through it one more time. We got a question from Mike who says, with the announcement this week from Pop that Kawhi will likely miss the rest of the season, I think it might be time to start including the Spurs in the discussion of teams that could miss the playoffs in the West. They are currently in third, which looks good, but they're only 3.5 games from the 9th seed going into the final third of the season. I know this question will probably get dismissed immediately by Ben, but are people sleeping on the possibility of San Antonio missing the playoffs? So answer that question, Ben, and then let's just have a bigger picture discussion of where we are with Kawhi right now.
Well, the first thing I'd say is, you know, if you look at the projection systems, they are very bullish on San Antonio staying in the playoff pictures. For example, I'm just going to throw this out. ESPN says 98% chance they make the playoffs. Now, I think he is right. The emailer is right, Mike, to say, you know what? It's probably not 98%. Mm-hmm. But to me, you know, it's very, very high. And the reason why I say that is the bar, you know, at this point, it's going to be around 44, 45 wins to get in, I believe, if you kind of extrapolate off of like where the 8th and 9th seeds are right now. You know, San Antonio record-wise, doesn't even have to go 500 to reach that bar the rest of the way. And if you just kind of add up the gimme games that they should win because they're the Spurs and going down the stretch, even though they have a very difficult kind of closing stretch this season and they play a lot of teams head-to-head who are going to be jockeying for playoff position, I challenge Mike or anybody else to say that, you know, San Antonio is somehow going to skid out, you know, going like 6-20 to close the season. I just really don't see that happening. So I think there's a strong chance that they fall out of the top four in the West bracket. I think you can make that argument, you know, pretty convincingly just because of the strength of their schedule.
Yeah.
But to really lose all of that ground to me feels very, very unlikely. And remember, they're where they are right now, not with Kawhi's help. You know, it's not their current record has been earned by the guys who are on the team. It's not like they lost Kawhi halfway through the season. Now, okay, we have to, you know, figure out who's going to fill his minutes and so forth. So from that standpoint, I expect moderate regression in the standings from San Antonio, not a full-on collapse.
Okay, well, that's easily the most boring prediction you could make. Probably accurate, and I will say that people shouldn't dismiss the possibility of them missing the playoffs, because while you're right that that they've done most of this without Kawhi, I do think that like it's easier to kind of hold down the fort if you think Kawhi is going to be back for the second half of the season, and that's what they've been doing for most of this year. And now, I mean, now they are really kind of looking up and down the roster, and it's like, oh shit, so like this is the team we have, and we're really counting on Kyle Anderson to play 30 minutes a game and be a star-level player.
Can I twist that a little bit? Because I think part of what I was hearing before the All-Star break and why we talked about it over the All-Star break was that there was internal concern that he wasn't coming back.
Yeah.
So I think that that's already been a seed planted in their head, like they might not get him back. I think the point you're raising,
I think the
factors
players
in a lot
now,
more in it. No, I think the players were already feeling that way.
Okay.
I mean, I think this, what I'm saying is the internal feeling in San Antonio among players, just among the organization, whatever, you know, starting right around that first Woj report where, okay, everybody's at loggerheads and this has kind of gotten ugly, was this sense that, like, we don't know if we can count on him if he's coming back, so let's dig in and be Spurs-like, next man up, and just try to, you know, plunge forward into the abyss, right? Mm-hmm. But I think the point you're making is very strong for the playoffs. It's a lot easier to say, hey, we're going to get through the next 25 games without Kawhi. We can do this. It's a lot different to stare down Houston, Golden State, Oklahoma City in a series and say, we don't have our best guy.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where it gets a little bit dicey, and where I think, you know, some of the questions about self-belief and confidence and those things, when you don't have that A-level talent, you know, that A-list guy, that's where it gets trickier. But I don't think that they're coming out of this break like shaken by this news about Kawhi Leonard. I think they're fairly well prepared for it. And you know, both Popovich and Manu kind of took the same tactic that I took when we were talking, you know, over the All-Star weekend, which is basically like, it's now or never. Like, this isn't something that we can decide in early March. Like, Kawhi, if you're ready to go, get back. Right now is the time to do it. If not, we'll see you in September. And I think it's really smart for them to do that. I think some analysts were saying, hey, was Popovich challenging Kawhi a little bit?
That's how I heard it. Honest to God, yeah. I heard that podcast, and it almost, or not the podcast. I would listen to a Greg Popovich podcast, but I heard that interview, and I thought to myself, like, man, that sounded a lot like Greg Popovich basically warning Kawhi, like, don't think that you're going to come back here in 5 weeks and just slide into the playoffs. Like, this is, we kind of have to get into gear here if you want to do this.
100%. I think it's exactly the right way to play it. And if Kawhi's not ready, he's not ready. And so you go forward without him. And I think your team mentality is better off that way. And I think Kawhi's long-term health and, you know, where he's at in his career is better off that way, too. So, to me, all signs, even though it's very dysfunctional by Spurs standards for all this stuff to be coming out, for, you know, Popovich apparently to be challenging his best player in public, I think it was the right move. You know, set the deadline, and if he can't hit it, then you go forward. And, you know, whether you want to call it a lost season, I mean, I think they would still have a chance to win a playoff series, you know, depending on how the seedings broke down. So I would say, you know, making the playoffs and winning a series without Kawhi would be an achievement. But I don't think that they should be caught up in the Kawhi melodrama here for the next 6 or 7 weeks. I think that would be the worst case scenario for San Antonio, because it would be a big distraction.
Yeah. I mean, my official prediction, while acknowledging that people should be more worried about the Spurs than they probably have been all year, It does kind of feel like this is going to turn into a Greg Popovich masterpiece where he takes DeJounte Murray and Kyle Anderson and somehow finishes with like the third seed, which would be kind of fun to watch. But to your point, the playoffs, it'll get a lot more complicated and pretty rough. But bigger picture, has Kawhi played his last game for the Spurs?
Why are you doing this to me, Andrew? Come on, man. It's your birthday. Aren't you in a better mood than that?
This has all gotten very weird. And to be clear, I signed off the Kawhi thing we talked about. The conversation we had last week ended with me saying, I'm going to go to All-Star Weekend and try to find out more about Kawhi. And I did ask a number of people about him and what's going on in San Antonio. And surprise, surprise, nobody has any idea what the hell is happening with the Spurs. I did hear from one person within the league from another team who basically said, like, all of what you've heard and all of what's been reported is very real, and it's gotten pretty awkward between them. There's a lot of distance and not much communication, but the Spurs are basically going to proceed like nothing's happening here, and they are going to wait until he comes back healthy before they make any sort of decision. So that's probably how this will play out. And I think if you're betting, bet on San Antonio waiting until Kawhi comes back in like September or October. But in between there, like they also have to decide whether to offer him a Supermax extension this summer, and Kawhi would then have to decide whether to take it. Like there's a lot of uncertainty here.
I mean, my advice to Kawhi would be the same advice I gave to John Wall last summer, is if they offer it, take it and run.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he's had a few injury issues over the course of his career. Obviously, this is the most significant one, but he hasn't been immune. He's not some Iron Man. So if they put that offer on the table, take it. And if I'm San Antonio, I do put that offer on the table this summer, despite whatever happened, over the last 6 months, to harm people's feelings. And if they're able to talk LaMarcus Aldridge into coming back after kind of some questions about his role, with that extension, the money talked on that one, I think, San Antonio offers a pretty compelling overall package to Kawhi in terms of what he's looking for. As far as we know, we kind of have to speculate on what motivates him. But if he gets max money, he's the number one guy on a team. He's competing for championships basically every single year. And they've got a great front office and ownership group kind of trying to build teams around him that are ready to have, elite defenses and quality offenses year in, year out. That's pretty good, and I think Kawhi would have a hard time, like a lot of other superstars would, finding a better overall package than that. So I guess from that standpoint, I would say bet on the Spurs and bet on the money talking.
Okay.
And, I would assume that this will blow over, but it's weird. I mean, there's no question about it. It's weird. And the fact that, the reports are he's medically cleared, but he doesn't want to come back is sort of how it's being framed, that he's not comfortable with his leg or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. That is very strange, because we know Kawhi is this insane competitor who's improved himself for the last 5-6 years, year after year after year after year. Those are the guys usually who can't wait to get back on the court. So some portion of this story is not being told.
Absolutely right. There's definitely some missing pieces to the puzzle here. But not to push you too hard, because I know this is sensitive territory for you. There's a scandal in the monastery, and these are your people. But if Kawhi doesn't take the Supermax this summer, what do you do then?
Offer it to him again. I think you can't let it get that bad. That's a huge if. I would be shocked if he didn't.
Okay.
I mean, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you be shocked if he didn't?
I guess so. It's hard to read.
At that point, he would just... Yeah, I think at that point, it's a Kyrie situation. If he really won't take the money, then you're like, all right, we have to trade you. What's your list of teams? Let's try to, find out who can offer the best package in return. And if you're San Antonio, that would be awful, because Kawhi was your youth movement. You've got all sorts of long-term money, or at least multiple-year money, to aging guys who are not in their prime. You've got a few nice young players, and you've got a great structure and system, but that would be, a real killer. But you'd also have a huge market for Kawhi. I think all the best teams would come calling very quickly, and you know, can you imagine what Boston would throw at San Antonio for Kawhi? I mean, I think they'd be able to put together a really compelling package. Or your favorite underdog, you know, trade target team, the Lakers, you know, homecoming for Kawhi. I mean, there would be a market for Kawhi. There's no doubt about it. And I think,
and look,
San Antonio could, here's the thing though, San Antonio could get more for Kawhi than Cleveland got for Kyrie.
I don't know if that's 100% true, because Cleveland, it just depends on the timing. But my dream trade, which isn't going to happen for a lot of different reasons, but it would, like, the Celtics would look so much better if they could trade Hayward to the Spurs and get Kawhi in that role. And it probably, the Spurs, if I were them, I wouldn't try to trade Kawhi until the deadline, because like you're saying, he has so much value that I think you could still get like a great haul for him, even if you try to trade him in February, assuming you're trading him to a team. Like I don't think there's any way they deal him to anyone but the Lakers, the Clippers, the Celtics, like maybe the Heat, but no team is gonna trade for him without the expectation that he signs there long term.
I think the Spurs would do the, we're sitting down over a fancy dinner with wine, do you want to be here? If Kawhi says no, then he's gone.
Yeah,
you know, they trade him immediately.
Well,
I think that's
like
the smart way to do it, because the longer you wait, if you wait to the deadline, value is eroding, you know? And so I think his trade value has already eroded, because you're hedging on whether he could get as much as Kyrie. I mean, this is a guy who was number two on your MVP ballot last year. You'll remember, over Harden, inexplicably, but he's, you know, consensus top five player. He's certainly a cut above Kyrie Irving in terms of his overall reputation. And granted, you don't have the contract for as long extending into the future if you trade for him, but you would assume that his people and he would have influence on his, you know, landing destination, just like Kyrie did. I mean, you would go to a place you wanted to go to,
but
right?
But keep in mind,
so
though,
from that standpoint,
keep in mind that Kyrie, like, that deal worked out because Boston happened to be the most asset-rich team in the league, and they could afford to give up a top five or top 10 Nets pick. It looks more like that's going to be a top five pick at this point. But it, like, had Boston not been in the mix there, Cleveland didn't have a ton of great offers. Like, they were maybe going to get like Malcolm Brogdon and potentially Chris Middleton from the Bucks, but that's probably the best case scenario with that deal. Like, they were going to get Jamal Murray and some other trash from the Nuggets.
The good news is you're only judged by the trades you make, not the third best offers you get, right?
Yeah.
And so I think the best offer for Kawhi Leonard is going to be
there.
Yeah, well, Boston's still there. The Lakers are still there. I mean, there are teams that have assets that would really want Kawhi Leonard. Every team in the league would want him. And I think San Antonio would clear up just fine if they got pushed to the brink where Kawhi's like, I don't want to be here, you know?
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Because the dinner you describe, like the sit down and just have a heart-to-heart, like it seems like that dinner should have happened a month ago. And it, for whatever reason, it hasn't. And there's still all this ambiguity there in San Antonio. It's going to be really interesting to watch. And also a little bit frustrating, because I feel like we're never going to get the full story. And even if we do, it won't happen until like a year from now after all of this is played out, because that's just the way the Spurs work.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing I'd say too, and I mentioned this about Isaiah Thomas sort of, you know, not really understanding the moment he had in Cleveland or taking the success that he had in Boston for granted. Kawhi, don't take the Spurs for granted. I mean, you've only known, that's the only home you've known.
Here we go.
You didn't go through the Sacramento and the Phoenix phases like Isaiah Thomas to have some level of contrast. I mean, there's lots of places you can go where his type of game is not going to produce, you know, 60-win teams.
This is you inserting yourself into the heart-to-heart between Kawhi and Popovich. You're the third seat at the table here, just reaching out.
No. Well, look, because it's good cop, bad cop, because you know Pop will fall on the sword just like he did with LaMarcus. You know, it was all my fault, LaMarcus, that you fell apart in the playoffs. I didn't use you right. You know, it's our offensive system. I'm going to make sure you get all those mid-range shots that we both know are not good for us so that you're comfortable and you're happy. That's how Pop's going to play it, because, you know, Kawhi's the breadwinner here.
Sure.
I mean, obviously, he's the franchise player.
Look, Kawhi is amazing.
I'm playing bad cop, okay? I'm saying, Kawhi, look, San Antonio made you, man. Like, you played a huge part in it, but the finals MVP, the mentoring from Duncan, all of the moves they've made to surround you with teams that are capable of winning now, that doesn't happen on 30 organizations around the league. You know, that happens maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 of them. And, you know, getting to one of those spots, if it's not San Antonio, is sometimes easier said than done.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was starting to think about it, like, I could see him potentially wanting out for marketing reasons, which I think is part of the reason that KD wanted to move as well. But his brand is so inextricably linked to the Spurs. It would be weird to throw him in LA and suddenly like ask him to be the face of a team, because he's just not that guy and never has been. Like he yeah. does work better with the Spurs than he would in a lot of places, in my opinion.
And here's another great comparison on that point. Remember when KD left, Russell had to step up and do the media stuff, right?
And he
had to change his whole... And he could do it. And he did do it. And people wondered whether he would be able to accept that responsibility and kind of change his personality and open up and be more patient and give fuller answers and talk about the team's direction and praise his younger teammates and do the stuff that number one guys have to do. Kawhi has not had to do that in San Antonio,
It would actually be really funny to see him go to a team and become a completely different person. Like, he turns into
100%.
This gregarious jokester who's just down for whatever. But failing that, I don't see it working out for him on the marketing side anyways.
He just lives his commercial where he's like karate chopping stuff and, you know, yeah. balance beams
yeah,
and all that.
That guy.
As like... As like the new face of the Knicks, and he's like in buddy comedy movies with Porzingis. Yeah, that would be a real turn from Kawhi. But I think it's a fair question. If he wants out, if he wants to go somewhere else, is he really ready to handle everything that comes with it? You know, we don't know that.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not trying to slander Kawhi. I think he's one of the players I respect more than any other in the league for how continually...
We know. Don't worry about it.
He's improved over the course of his career, but... You know, don't take things for granted, especially if there's a Supermax offer on the table and you're coming off a year-long injury.
Yeah. All right. Well, a couple more questions here because I know you have to go. So Brett says, I'm a LeBron stan, but hearing him tell Adam Silver to pump the brakes about reseeding the playoffs is legitimately hilarious. And then one other thing from Jason, who is talking about realignment. He says, the NBA is going to expand and add two new teams, and it's going to shorten the schedule and reseed the playoffs. It no longer seems like a matter of if, but when. First, we dump East and West, and then we go four divisions. So that actually, I liked that email, and he actually wrote a lot more than that in going into detail about how this would work. But I like that because adding two teams to the league could help make up for the revenue shortfall that you would see if you shorten the 82 game schedule, and then splitting them into four divisions helps preserve some of the regional rivalries, and also makes it more palatable to just go 1 through 16 with the playoffs in general.
Yeah, I mean, you East Coast guys, you tradition lovers, these regional rivalries, as if they matter, man. Come on, get on a global level. You know, do you think our friends in Australia or our listeners, you know, on the top of the mountains that we've heard from in China care at all about like Philly, Boston, you know, or DC, Boston, whatever?
No,
come on.
I think it does matter.
They care about
though.
Great basketball and the biggest stars playing in the biggest moments on the biggest stage in the NBA Finals, and whatever gets us to that goal. Rather than, you know, these little rinky-dink regional things you keep clinging to, that's what I prioritize.
All right, but I know so many different people from Boston and New York and Philly, and I don't know anybody from Utah, or I know one person from Portland, Ben Golliver. I don't, but like I like having various people in my life that I can scream at during big playoff series. So if it's possible to preserve some of that, I'm in.
All right. Well, be a happier person. Yeah, you don't need to be screaming
shit,
at anyone.
Actually.
Just enjoy the beautiful game here. Come on.
Yeah, it's fine. I don't really care. I do think that the four division format could be very cool, at least for the regular season. So basically what we're talking about is preserving some of the regional stuff for the regular season and then randomizing the schedule otherwise. What do you think about it? So Seattle would definitely be one of the expansion teams. I think that's kind of a given at this point. What about the other city? Do you have any favorite?
No, not really. I mean, because he hasn't pushed that hard enough for me to feel like it's really coming. I mean, they would really have made that the centerpiece of All-Star Weekend, of his speech, if this was coming imminently, I think. Just because, think about how much money the bidding wars would set off for those franchises. If Silver comes out and says, yes, we're considering expansion, send me in your bids. You know, like, there's a lot of money at stake. So from a financial standpoint, I think the NBA should seriously consider expansion.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit. But if you want to throw out markets, go for it.
Yeah, my dream would be to have one in Vegas. And I don't think that they would ever do that. But I just think if you're going to go for it, go for it, okay? I don't want a team in Louisville. I don't want a team in Kansas City. Let's just throw them in Vegas and Seattle and make the NBA as cool as possible.
Man, do you know what the darkest thing is I just remembered?
What?
The last time we had this conversation was like probably a year or more ago, and I threw out Havana, Cuba, and we both were like, yes, that's what needs to happen, and the politics have changed so much that that's now completely impossible.
Yeah, probably untenable.
I'm about to start crying. This is terrible.
I mean, look, Havana, Cuba, who knows where we'll be in 5 years. That would be pretty wonderful as well if we want to go. Or London.
Yeah.
I mean,
hey,
I would be...
Well, look, if you want to talk regional rivalries, I'll get in for Havana versus Miami. I'll be there every game for that series.
Yeah, I'm in. Yeah, I think the big picture, though... The money is there. The talent is there. I mean, the talent pool is deep enough now that I think we could sustain 32 teams. And it would allow them to shorten the schedule, which seems like the direction that things should be moving anyways. So I think that happens probably within 5 years. Completely uninformed prediction there. That and Lauri Markkanen. Buy in.
Well, that's a headline. Take and run with it, guys. You know what to do. In terms of LeBron's comments, was he essentially saying he's staying in the Eastern Conference this summer if he says pump the brakes by reseeding the playoffs?
No,
that to me seems like an Eastern Conference stance. It's like, look, don't screw this up. I've got a fast track to the finals every single year. I'm not trying to blow that by going to Houston.
Yeah, well, and again, as a child of the East, I really appreciated him repping for us because he did point out that, like, 7 of the last 14 title winners have come from the East. So all you elitists can suck on that. You know what I mean?
I mean, look, I'll call the Eastern Conference AAA to everyone, including your face, but not LeBron. I'm not calling it. I'm not going to use the show in an interview with LeBron.
He is also he's the only player in the NBA who could credibly look at Adam Silver and be like, nah, man, you need to chill. Take it down a notch. We're not ready for that direction yet. But let's move on to the last two questions here. The first is from Luke, who says, my girlfriend Katie came up with the best analogy yet for Kevin Durant. He is the Warriors trophy wife, and it is not going to end well. Here are a couple reasons why. Like many trophy wives, he was wooed in the Hamptons. He is the trophy for the Warriors' past success. But like many such instances, the actual fit has not been great. And like many trophy wives, he's started getting bored. He's flirting with exes and rivals alike, and he's not looking too engaged at home. Was the All-Star game not more symbolic of this? I think they've seen their best days, and the end is nigh. He will soon be discovered in the bed of another. I don't know if we prompted this with our discussion, but I don't think KD free agency rumors are a thing, nor should they be. But
I don't think Katie even exists, because Luke, this does not sound like a woman wrote this. This sounds like you wrote this and attribute it to your girlfriend. So Katie, if you're real, send us an email and confirm that, please. I have no response to this. I think if we really look at what Katie's said and done, he seems pretty darn happy.
To be clear, though, Luke is a Warriors fan, and I think one of my favorite parts about this Katie Warriors era has been realizing that like more than 50% of Warriors fans also don't like Kevin Durant and resent his presence on the team. And that to me, there's not a lot of drama with what Golden State is actually going to do, but it's nevertheless pretty entertaining to watch them try to pretend to like Kevin Durant.
Look, I wouldn't go that far, the percentage you just threw out, but I do think it's clear, like, Steph is the favorite son, and KD is the hired gun. But look, I think he should be scared if KD left, because if you look at their salary cap situation, I mean, they paid Steph a lot. They've got Klay and Draymond on the books for a lot. And a deal you've questioned before, you know, Andre Iguodala, that looks fine if you're just paying to keep him to keep the whole crew together. But if KD decides to leave, now that Andre Iguodala deal is preventing you from going out and getting sort of a KD replacement, right? So I think the Warriors' concerns, I mean, first of all, Warriors fans are so spoiled. They're just out there looking for things to be worried about because they're bored.
They really don't care. But, it totally is like nitpicking perfection.
Yeah. But like if he did leave, that would put them over a barrel, and it would end the dynasty. You know, I mean, that would bring them back to earth enough where like you could not say every year guaranteed 60 plus wins. Like it would pierce them enough to the point where we would have real games to talk about instead of all these conspiracy theories, which we've been dealing with for the last 6 months.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because that's a perfect segue to our final question. This is building off of the LeBron and KD Lakers scenario that we mentioned on the last podcast. JMM Folgado says, in that utopian scenario where LeBron and KD both end up in Staples this offseason, what would the Warriors possibly do with the cap space left over? Who's their starting small forward in 2018 and 2019? And why isn't Paul George an option? And look, you make the point that they would have to get off the Iguodala deal to make any of this possible. But in the bullshit scenario that we have concocted, where KD and LeBron are teaming up, Paul George to Golden State makes a lot of sense as well.
Way too complicated to get it done. Here's one thing that you can say. This is how you know Steph Curry is an unbelievable player. He's set to make $37.5 million next season, and no one ever brings that up or raises that as a point, you know? Because, like, he's so above reproach.
Him and LeBron are the only two players that could make that worthwhile.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. It's like I'm constantly making fun of you for the John Wall contract, the Blake Griffin contract. They had to trade like a hot potato, get rid of it as soon as possible. Like Steph just signed a deal bigger than any of those, basically, and it never even gets mentioned because, yo, he's just worth it, period. Give him the money. You know, it's however much we have to pay him, he's worth it. Go with it. But if you're in a retooling scenario where you're coming out like a post-Kevin Durant reality, that contract is preventing you from getting another star. In my opinion, I mean, the Warriors have worked wonders many times before, but if KD goes, I think they would be doing stuff like starting Nick Young at small forward next year.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that.
Yeah, it could be like in the same way that I panicked after the Porzingis injury and had to start trading various stars that I had on my fantasy team. They could easily look at that roster and be like, all right, now we have to trade Klay to even out the depth a little bit. Although Bob Myers is probably smarter than I am as a manager and wouldn't do that.
Possibly. Probable, possible. Yeah.
Who can say for sure? Who knows? Anyways, let's cut it there. We will be back next Tuesday.
One thing, though, Andrew, before we get to the plugs that I know people are looking for, I do need to make a quick fact check on the last podcast, because I had a number of people email me about this. Now, you might remember the controversy of the Rising Stars MVP vote.
Of course.
Where I selected Bogdanovich over Buddy Hield, you know, narrowly avoiding missing the deadline thanks to my great conversation with Kiki Vandeweghe's brother. during my explanation of my vote for the Rising Stars MVP, I said that I voted for Bogdanovich over Buddy Hield because Buddy was a falling star and he was too old to be in that game. As many people pointed out, Bogdanovich is actually significantly older than Buddy Hield. So
now,
I'm in the awkward position of having to explain the joke, because Andrew, for like the last 2 years dating back to when Buddy Hield, I think, was even in college, it's been a recurring joke that I call Buddy Hield 30. You know, after they traded for him in the Cousins package, I was joking that they didn't get a young prospect because Buddy's too old. And
right.
This is humor. So I'm at the point, it's very awkward. I have to explain the joke here. But yes, Bogdanovich is also too old, far too old to be playing in the Rising Stars game. And once I really started reflecting on this, Andrew, it's like the Kings sent their varsity players down to like eighth grade to dominate for All-Star Weekend, and like that was their big win, and they were very excited about it. You know, having those two guys, like, you know, heading up the Rising Stars game.
It was a coup for them.
And yeah, I mean, that's That's so sad and so depressing and kind of quintessential Kings, if you think about it, right? Like, what's the game they can win? Oh, let's throw in our 7-year vets into the Rising Stars game. We're going to take home the title.
Yes. Well, to be clear, I knew that Bogdanovich was older than Buddy Hield, but I wasn't going to step on your joke. And but thank you to all the Kings fans who emailed in to point that out. And I guess I'll let you do plugs here now, but I want you to know that I'm not going to let you plug your Instagram on every single podcast for the rest of the season. This is a habit we got into over All-Star, and your stories have been great, but it's time to move on.
Andrew, 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. Support both Andrew and myself. You know what makes a great birthday present for Andrew? All the Team Sharp members out there looking to get something for the guy who has it all and he's very difficult to get presents for.
Right.
A 5-star review on Apple Podcasts would be unbelievable. He is waiting to read your review on there. We're closing in on 7,000 reviews, all 5 stars. Unbelievable response from the Open Floor Globe community. We appreciate that and really respect it. Andrew, also, they can email us at openfloormail@gmail.com. openfloormail@gmail.com for all their questions, concerns, Bogdanovich, age checks, Kevin Durant, conspiracy theories, trophy wife analogies, made-up girlfriend emails, all that stuff. openfloormail@gmail.com. And by the way, I'm almost at 2,000 followers on Instagram, Andrew. Ben.Golver. Until next week, I'll talk to you.
All right, man. Take it easy.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.